So people are loving the new app Draft, or even just doing it on their computer at playdraft.com, because it's still every week you get a chance to go ahead and do 1 week fantasy football, but it's a snake draft. So you get all the benefits of 1 week fantasy football, which is not having to, you know, worry about injuries. I mean, obviously, if something happens during the game, something happens during the game. But you know what I mean? Going into it, it's not like a season-long league. It's weekly. But you get to do a snake draft. It's crazy easy. They have drafts starting all the time. Like, you can, as soon as you download the app on your phone, the draft app, you can be playing a game in minutes. Or, like I said, right from your computer at playdraft.com. For a limited time only, all new players get a free entry into one of these best ball drafts when you make your first deposit, but you have to use the promo code FEAST. That's right, play a real money game for free. Just use our promo code FEAST on your first deposit on Draft. Again, just search Draft in the App Store or go to playdraft.com. Make sure you play for free by using our promo code FEAST.
It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Ross Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eating Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. It is week two, and we need the wisdom of the one and only Evan Silva from Roto World, because we got some injury issues to deal with. I know I got Allen Robinson on my squad, so I'm looking for a receiver that might be able to help me. It stinks. It's probably going to ruin my chance. I smoked the dude in the first week of the Fantasy Feast podcast league, and now I just lost my second best receiver in Allen Robinson. Anyway, we're presented by betonline.ag, the online gaming website of choice for the Fantasy Feast podcast, with the best odds and fast payouts. I know a lot of you love fantasy football. You love gaming as well. I got Madden codes. I got Madden hard copies. And I'm giving out at least one a week, really, for the foreseeable future, thanks to the folks over at EA. So make sure you're signed up to get my monthly, or really it's like once every 2 months, emails over at rostucker.com. Just go there, sign up, because I'll tell you there how you can win the Madden for this week. So fired up to get your thoughts, Evan, on what we now know from week one in terms of usage for guys and how these teams want to play. I know it's only 1 week, but still, it's the only week we have to go by right now. And teams, these are real games now, so teams are revealing what they've got. Check out Evan on Twitter, at Evan Silva. He is the star of this podcast, or over at rotoworld.com. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. The podcast, all of the RT Media podcasts, handles at RTF podcast. Who knows? Maybe we'll even be hiring somebody at some point. I know this. If we are, we'll go to ZipRecruiter. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within 1 day. As soon as you post it to ZipRecruiter, boom, 100-plus job sites. So find out what ZipRecruiter can do for you by posting your jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/feast. That's ZipRecruiter.com/feast. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/feast. All right, Evan, let us start with Thursday night's game. It's Houston Texans who are starting Deshaun Watson at quarterback, even though Billy O'Brien was trying to keep it a secret, against the Cincinnati Bengals. Both teams, both offenses were horrendous in week one. Where do we go from here?
This is the worst game on the slate. Everybody's going to be watching it. Everyone the next day is going to be complaining. You know, it's just it's going to be a really ugly one. Lowest scoring, lowest projected total of week two. Texans gave up 10 sacks in week one. Andy Dalton committed 5 turnovers in week one, although 2 of his interceptions came on tips. You know, it's just you're starting DeAndre Hopkins because he has almost no target competition. The Texans, all 3 of their tight ends suffered concussions in week one. In addition to Brian Cushing, he was also concussed, and another guy who I'm forgetting. I mean, this is a brutal sport, Ross. I'm glad that you made it out in good shape and with your health, honestly. You know, DeAndre Hopkins, because he's really good. Lamar Miller, because he has secure usage. He played the second most snaps of any running back in the NFL in week one. The Texans did say that they are going to play Deontay Foreman a little bit more. But, I mean, it would be hard not to after Deontay Foreman played 2 snaps and had 1 carry in week one and played behind Tyler Irvin in addition to Miller. On the Bengals side, you know, you're just betting on A.J. Green and Tyler Eifert because they're awesome. Can't use any member of their backfield. We're going to have to get to a point where we see that the Bengals change the way that they are using their running backs. And you can't really use Joe Mixon or Giovanni Bernard right now unless you're truly desperate, and it's just like a bad start. So we're going to see the rookie John Ross. He is expected to debut. He has been a full participant at practice, and that's going to eat into Brandon LaFell and Tyler Boyd's playing time and or targets. So, you know, again, A.J. Green, Tyler Eifert, DeAndre Hopkins seems obvious, but that's the only way we can go.
Yeah, and honestly, Evan, I know you and I were talking about it. The Bengals, I should say, are my DraftKings defense of the week. I know that they're a little expensive at $3,900, but you're starting a rookie quarterback who's clearly not ready based on the preseason and week one of the regular season on the road with a sprained ankle on a short week behind a terrible offensive line against a really pretty good front from the Bengals. I mean, this has turnovers, sacks. This has it all there for you if you want. And sometimes in life, you get what you pay for. So they're $3,900. I don't care. Get to DraftKings.com now. Use the promo code FEAST to play in DraftKings' free contest with $100,000 in total prizes this Sunday. That's promo code FEAST to compete for your share of $100,000 in total prizes. Contest is totally free to enter, so you should give it a shot. Why not? DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. The 1 o'clock games, Sunday at 1, Cleveland and Baltimore, Evan.
Ravens defense looks really, really strong here. Even behind a very good offensive line, the Browns offensive line, DeShone Kizer took 7 sacks in week one in a home game against the Steelers. DeShone Kizer has to get rid of the ball more quickly. I think he's a promising prospect, but as we did last week, we're going to continue to shoot defenses at him and score fantasy points. And the Ravens are an awesome play this week. The backfield is a topic of debate right now with no Danny Woodhead in the mix. He was going to have a huge season. That was evident on the Ravens' opening drive. He had 3 catches, was getting a bunch of red zone work. He's out of the way. Drop him in most leagues. I mean, I'm going to be dropping him in any 12-team league where I own him, and I do own him in a couple of leagues. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. I think that Buck Allen is the best receiving back left on the Ravens roster, and I think that he is a threat for 4, 5, 6 targets every single game. Joe Flacco has a big arm, but he also checks the ball down as often as any quarterback in the league. The Browns defended the run very well in week one, much better than I expected against Pittsburgh. And it's not a great matchup from that standpoint, but the Ravens are significant home favorites, and this is a game where the Ravens should theoretically be able to control. I don't think that the Browns are going to have much offensive success, and the Ravens should be able to control this one. Terrence West is very viable. I think that Buck Allen is a guy that you pick him up, and you use him, especially in PPR. Mike Wallace, you know, would like to see him do something before investing anything into him. Jeremy Maclin, I mean, if you started Jeremy Maclin in week one, he wasn't a very good start, but he did have a 48-yard touchdown where the Bengals just kind of blew it. He got left wide open. Joe Flacco audibled, threw it to Maclin in the slot. He went untouched to the house for a 48-yard score, and he pays off with one play. Other than that, Jeremy Maclin had, I think, 8 yards on 3 targets. He does have a pretty good matchup, but he's not he doesn't stand out as a strong fantasy start. All of the Ravens tight ends in week one, each of them, Ben Watson, Max Williams, and Nick Boyle, each had 1 target in week one. All of those guys are, you know, they're not factors in fantasy right now. On the Browns side, again, starting defenses every week against DeShone Kizer until he shows that we should stop. This is a really bad matchup for Isaiah Crowell as a big road underdog against, what perennially is one of the NFL's best run defenses. But his usage was very, very promising in week one. And, he's like a legit every down back right now. And his schedule loosens up considerably after two tough games to open the year. So hang tight with Isaiah Crowell. But I would have very lowered expectations on the road against Baltimore. Duke Johnson is now a slot receiver. I know that Hugh Jackson came out and said that was maybe game plan dependent, but not really buying that. He was a slot receiver in the preseason too. I think we're going to see him at slot receiver. That actually lowers his value. It is not a Ty Montgomery-like situation where last year Ty Montgomery was, you could use him at wide receiver in your fantasy lineup, but he was getting 20 touches as a running back. You know, it's the inverse. Duke Johnson, I would drop him pretty much anywhere I had him outside of dynasty leagues. The receivers, Hugh Jackson is already saying that Kenny Britt might not start. He had a costly drop in the opener. Corey Coleman is the Browns' number one. I think he's going to break out big time this season if he stays healthy. DeShone Kizer looks for him. All the tight ends are non-factors right now. Seth DeValve and David Njoku split snaps in week one. And then Randall Telfer, the blocker, also mixed in.
What about a couple of winners, the Buffalo Bills and the Carolina Panthers? Now the Bills got to go on the road against a Carolina defense that looked frisky out in San Francisco.
Yeah, I talked to a lot of people, obviously, like in fantasy. A lot of people were telling me that they liked the guys in the 49ers passing game, specifically Marquise Goodwin in week one. And I couldn't really get behind that because I think that the Panthers have a legit good pass defense. Now, I did pick the 49ers to win, so I definitely punted that call. But, I mean, that was never like a dismissal of the Panthers' defense, which held 7 of their final 10 opponents last year to 20 points or fewer. And they played really, really well last week. They've got the 2 second-year cornerbacks, James Bradbury and Daryl Worley. Those guys are studs. And the linebacker core is healthy right now. But, you know, the most athletic linebacker core in the league. And they have a bunch of pieces up front, a bunch of rotational defensive linemen who all contribute. They have a really good and deep defense right now. And this is going to be a much tougher matchup for all the Bills guys than they saw in week one against the Jets, who are just like a rollover opponent. With that said, you know, Shady McCoy is going to continue to get a lot of work. He's not maybe someone that I'm going to be playing in daily fantasy this week, but I would certainly, you know, every week he's a guy that you want in your season long fantasy lineup. don't really want anything to do with the wide receivers in Buffalo. I know Jordan Matthews had a big play, and, I mean, Zay Jones caught a few passes. But, you know, these guys are bench fodder at best in season-long leagues and not people that you can rely on, especially in a difficult matchup like this. Tyrod Taylor was someone who I ended up using a lot in daily fantasy. I think he was the number 8 or 9 fantasy quarterback on the week in week one. So that helped. But, you know, this is, again, it's a much more difficult spot on the road against Carolina. I think that the Panthers' defense is squarely in play against Tyrod this week. And then Charles Clay is the pass catcher you can really use. He did have a solid week one, came close to 2 touchdowns, ended up with 1, led the Bills in targets with 9. And the Panthers last year allowed the 2nd most fantasy points to opposing tight ends. So, you know, if you are in a spot where you made the mistake of drafting Hunter Henry, and you need someone who's actually playing in his offense, Charles Clay is your man.
All right. What about in Carolina when they got the ball?
Yeah, so Cam, I think it's kind of, you know, predictable that he would have started off a little bit slow in week one. He only threw 2 passes in the preseason coming off throwing shoulder surgery. He wound up, he finished 9 of 9 for 108 yards and a touchdown. So I think that is promising. What concerns me a little bit with Cam is that he wasn't running. And he actually wound up with 6 carries in the box score, but 3 of them were kneel downs at the end of the game. With that said, he is someone that I'm looking at very much in daily fantasy this week. The Bills defense isn't very good. They've changed 6 of their 7, 6 of, in their defensive back 7, they have 6 new starters. The number 2 corner, EJ Gaines, got hurt last week. The number 1 corner is a rookie who wasn't a very good athlete, coming out of LSU's 12th percentile spark athlete, 32-inch vertical, Tre'Davious White. So, you know, he's a guy that we want to see prove himself before we start being concerned and really attacking him. And the way that we would attack him would be with Kelvin Benjamin, who did not have a great week one. But, you know, when Cam Newton only completes 17 passes for 171 yards in a game where the Panthers are just simply not forced to throw very much or to complete, you know, chunk gains, that's going to happen to passing game members. So I'm not worried right now about Kelvin Benjamin. He did disappoint me for sure in week one. And same goes for Greg Olsen, but not worried about these guys and starting them confidently against a Bills defense that I think when all said and done, we're not going to gaze upon this defense very favorably. The backfield was a near even committee in week one, which is kind of what we expected. Jonathan Stewart actually wound up out-touching Christian McCaffrey 20-18. Christian McCaffrey did play more snaps. But I mean, they used those guys on the field at the same time. Jonathan Stewart's touchdown occurred on a receiving play where Christian McCaffrey was the decoy. And, you know, you could see a couple of the 49ers defenders like go with Christian McCaffrey, and that cleared a lane for Jonathan Stewart. Nice play call, play design there by Mike Shula. But those guys have about similar worth right now. In non-PPR leagues, Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey. In PPR leagues, the edge goes to McCaffrey, who led the team in targets in week one. That is great to see, by the way, for Christian McCaffrey in PPR. But, you know, people that were reaching for Christian McCaffrey in the 2nd round, I think are going to be a little bit disappointed. But, again, this is a game where the Panthers project to have a lead, and both of these guys should end up racking up a good amount of touches and end up being quality fantasy starts. Jonathan Stewart was a guy you could get in the double-digit rounds every single draft, and he's a legit fantasy starter right now.
Let's get to Indianapolis. I'm going to be there, and it's an NFL game, and I'm looking forward to it, and it's desperate times call for desperate measures, I suppose, for each one of these teams, but man, we don't know as of Wednesday, 9:40 a.m. Eastern time, who will be the quarterback for the Colts. My suspicion is it'll be Jacoby Brissett. They are down another lineman as they just put Denzel Good, their right tackle, on IR. This is looking rough for the Colts. And the Arizona Cardinals obviously lost David Johnson. Bruce Arians was on SiriusXM NFL Radio last night and said, and I quote, "We're hoping to get him back by Christmas," which means, in my mind, he won't play football this year anymore. I don't know if Andrew Luck will play football at all this year. What does it mean from a fantasy perspective in this game?
Man, it's brutal. It's brutal. I mean, especially on the Colts side, there's still hope for a few Cardinals. But I don't, like, T.Y. Hilton, you know, he's really, really good, okay? But it just doesn't matter when his quarterback can't complete passes to him. And then now I would expect to see Patrick Peterson on him this week. Tyrann Mathieu got eaten up last week by Golden Tate, and he just has not been the same in a couple of years. You know, Tyrann Mathieu is like a legitimate liability right now. Hopefully he can get it together and improve, but he's gone through a lot of injuries and a lot of major surgeries. I own T.Y. Hilton in one season-long league, and I benched him last week, and I intend to bench him again. And I don't think that there's another Colt worth discussing. You know, I know that people get excited about Marlon Mack. He's hard to get excited about as a three-way timeshare back in a horrible offense, for me. And then with the Cardinals, so I did not think that Carson Palmer played nearly as badly as it was made out to be. I was not watching that game on Sunday, but I watched it on Tuesday. And the first interception was an option route where it was just a routine miscommunication, and the ball went right to the Lions cornerback. And I mean, that can happen to anyone. The second interception was, he had some pressure on him and he got hit in at the end of his follow through and the ball sailed and it went right to Glover Quinn. That can happen to anyone. And then the third one just bounced right off Andre Ellington and it bounced into the air and went to Miles Killebrew, the Lions strong safety, who returned it to the house. And look, I mean, a couple of ball bounces, you know, a little bit better communication, and we're not having this discussion. And J.J. Nelson, Palmer throws a beautiful deep ball down the left sideline to J.J. Nelson. J.J. Nelson doesn't go up and get it. You know, he essentially lets it bounce because he was scared to get hit. And, I mean, look, I can't blame him. He's 156 pounds. He's about to get leveled. You know, so I'm not going to call him soft or something like that. But, you know, I would bail out too. But, you know, that's 40 yards. That's a 40-yard gain that takes Carson Palmer from 269 yards to 309 yards. And Jermaine Gresham dropped a touchdown. And Jermaine Gresham scored a touchdown, like a run-after-catch touchdown. And he got another one. And he got negated at the penalty or at the back of the line of scrimmage on his own penalty. He negated his own touchdown. You don't see that very often. And then Larry Fitzgerald dropped a touchdown. So I don't think that Carson Palmer is done. I thought that he showed a lot of zip on his throws. He missed, like, there was one sideline out. I don't know. I could talk about this all day. I don't think that he's done. And I think that he is still in the mix as a streamer. And I talked to RotoPat Patrick Doherty this week. Where did he initially have Carson Palmer ranked? And he had him in like the 13 to 14 range among quarterbacks. And I think that is where he belongs. I'm still going to be using him in season long leagues this week. I'm going to have a little bit of exposure to him in daily fantasy as well. He's facing the Colts. At the same time, you know, I don't know about the long-term staying power of this offense with no DJ. And after they just lost their left tackle, DJ Humphries, but Larry Fitzgerald now is in a position where he has a real chance to get 15 targets per game. He got 13 in week one with David Johnson playing. And he's someone that you can still feel good about. John Brown, I thought, looked pretty good. He made some difficult catches along the sidelines. Did not have any big downfield plays. But this Colts defense gave up 7 completions of 20-plus yards to Jared Goff and the Rams in week one. And so I think that there is some chance that the Cardinals are able to get their downfield passing game going. With that said, you know, John Wetzel protecting the blind side for Carson Palmer at age, you know, 37 is a little bit scary. But, you know, I still have some optimism for the Cardinals offense, and I think that their defense can be good. They're favored by more than a touchdown on the road against the Colts.
Let's talk Titans-Jags. Titans did not run the ball all that effectively against the Raiders. The Jags and Leonard Fournette did against the Texans. High volume there, and the Texans will be without Allen Robinson, who is out for the year with a torn ACL, which stinks because he's on my Fantasy Feast season-long redraft team. So that's a big blow for me because receiver was already probably my weakest position. So it is what it is. That's why we play. That's why that helps keep it interesting. Why don't we start with the Titans' perspective on it, Evan? Because I think their offense is probably a little disappointing on Sunday.
I would agree. They came out throwing the ball. They have changed their offense. And I talked to some great Titans observers this offseason, and they expected the Titans to remain a two tight end heavy run first team. But that was not what we saw in week one. They were a three receiver pass first team. And, you know, I wonder if they decide that because that just didn't work. If they decide that they're going to go back to trying to pound the rock. I mean, DeMarco Murray only had 14 touches in week one. You know, that's very disappointing, just like from a reality and a fantasy standpoint. And look, this is a really, really good Jaguars defense. We talked about the talent, but, you know, all offseason, but they have, you know, the Jaguars year over year have looked pretty good on paper and then underachieved. They certainly did not underachieve against the Texans in week one. 10 sacks in a road game, just dominated the line of scrimmage. Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue, each had multiple sacks. Calais Campbell had 4 sacks. You know, it's not a very good matchup for Marcus Mariota. I own him in some season-long leagues, and I think I will be planning on starting him. I very likely will, just because I think he'll be the best option, you know, better option than a streamer that I could get off the wire. But the matchup is difficult. I think that Delanie Walker has the best chance of the Titans receivers, pass catchers, to have a big game. Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Bouye on the outside are just, they are lights out. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins, like if you owned DeAndre Hopkins last week, you should thank your lucky stars that he scored a touchdown because he had 55 yards on 16 targets against this Jaguars secondary. It is really, really good. People are excited about Corey Davis, as they should be. Played a lot more snaps than I expected him to in week one. He had 10 targets. Didn't help anyone in fantasy, but you know, we are concerned with usage, first and foremost. And Corey Davis is there already. And then Rishard Matthews, you know, he has a difficult matchup. So, and then on the Jaguars side, you know, it's just really clear what they are going to do or what they want to do. They had 39 rushing attempts in week one. Leonard Fournette had 20 touches at halftime. Blake Bortles finished with 11 completions, and now they just lost their best receiver. I think Marquise Lee is worth a pickup, even though he had 0 catches on 4 targets in week one. I mean, they're going to need to throw the ball at some point. I'm not entirely certain that it'll be this week, but I would put Marquise Lee into like the wide receiver 4/flex range right away. The matchup is pretty good against the Titans secondary. And the opportunity is going to be there. And then I think that, you know, when they start to play some, I don't know, we'll see what happens. But I think Marquise Lee is worth a pickup. Allen Hurns a little bit behind them. They have nothing going on at tight end. I mean, James O'Shaughnessy, who was with the Patriots all preseason, is like their receiving tight end right now. So, you know, Leonard Fournette, again, really promising debut. Love to see him get that work. Chris Ivory was awesome in a change-up role. He'd come in and he gave them explosive runs off the bench, and I think that he's worth rostering too. He's somebody that people are not really talking about, but he got 10 touches, I think, in week one. Yeah, 10 touches. He had a catch and 9 carries for 42 yards. I think that he is worth adding pretty much everywhere because he is standalone, some standalone value. And then if Leonard Fournette goes down, you have the starting running back for a team that is, you know, intent on limiting and managing and manipulating its quarterback.
KC against Philly. Maybe the most intriguing 1 o'clock game. Why don't you start with the Birds, yeah, the Eagles?
Yeah, so if you look at the slate and you just look at the game totals for the slate, there are two games way up top. It is the Saints against the Patriots and then the Falcons and the Packers. And those games both have totals way over 50. And then the third highest one is the Eagles and Chiefs way down at 47.5. But this is a good fantasy game, you know. Kareem Hunt, he's in great shape, you know. He now and he was in a difficult spot on paper in week one as a severe home or road underdog. And then now he's coming home as a pretty big favorite at home. So he's in an awesome situation. We saw him. I mean, I think the most impressive thing that I thought about Kareem Hunt was like the diversity of routes that he ran against the Patriots. I mean, this dude runs like legitimate downfield routes. He's not out there just catching checkdowns. He's awesome, and he's going to be a stud in fantasy as long as he stays healthy. You know, Travis Kelce has another difficult matchup. The Eagles are always good at tight end against tight ends because they're good at safety and because they're very athletic at linebacker. So it's a bet on the player and not any, you know, and sort of like a bet on the player beating his, you know, kind of external factors that could limit him. Tyreek Hill, I would expect him to be very high owned this week in daily fantasy. The Patriots really limited him in week one, but all it takes is one play with Tyreek Hill. And guess what? Devin McCourty blew his assignment on one play, and there's Tyreek Hill, you know, sprinting 20 yards behind the defense. And there's, you know, Tyreek Hill scored, I think, 19 standard league fantasy points in week one, and he got 13.5 on that singular play, the 75-yard touchdown on a bust by the Patriots. But now he gets an awesome matchup against the Eagles, who just lost their top cornerback, Ronald Darby, until midseason. No interest in any of the Chiefs' other wideouts. Alex Smith, Andy Behrens of Yahoo, his favorite statistic is that Alex Smith has never thrown for more than 300 yards in the same season twice. He does have some 300-yard games in his history, but he's never thrown for over 300 yards in the same season twice. So that will be put to the test immediately in week two, because this is a very good matchup for him, and he played very well in the opener. I think that he's definitely in the streamer conversation this week. And then on the Eagles side, Carson Wentz was spectacular in week one. I mean, again, I think that people sleep on his athleticism at times, how good of an athlete he is. He's like a legit scrambling threat, and he can make plays in the pocket with his legs and get himself out of trouble. I would not be scared to play him against the Chiefs. I mean, it's not ideal. You know, playing guys at Arrowhead is never ideal. But with no Eric Berry, and Tom Brady had a lot of time. I think, you know, Justin Houston had some very good rushes in week one, but Tom Brady had a lot of time on a lot of plays in week one. And I don't think that the Chiefs' pass rush is all the way there. And then losing Eric Berry, you know, that really helps Zach Ertz, who he's going to be a machine this year. I should have had him higher in my rankings. He's going to be a super high volume tight end this year. I think I had him at like the tight end 10 or tight end 9. You know, he's a legit threat to be like a top 5, top 3 fantasy tight end this year. Feeling really, really good about him. Alshon, you know, you can keep your receivers away from Marcus Peters and get him on the other Chiefs cornerbacks pretty easily because Marcus Peters never moves. Although he did move some in the week one game against the Patriots, they put him on Chris Hogan quite a bit. I don't know that that's going to become a regular thing. Terrence Mitchell gave up almost 100 yards in week one, and he got flagged for multiple penalties. He's a legit liability, and hopefully the Eagles will be able to get Alshon schemed up against him. You know, Alshon obviously has a huge size advantage on Terrence Mitchell. And then Aguilar made some plays in week one. Now, most of it came on that play that Carson Wentz made, which was, I think it was over 50 yards for a touchdown. And that was a Carson Wentz play, you know, not necessarily a Nelson Aguilar play. But seeing him get 8 targets, you know, and this is a good matchup, he's in discussion. You know, I would want to see him do it again. But then, you know, if he has another good game, you're leaving those points on the table. I mean, he's a tough one, you know, and we will see. He's just going to be a guy that still, to me, is in kind of prove-it mode. The backfield is a disaster, as we expected. LeGarrette Blount wound up with a pretty decent fantasy game because he caught a 1-yard touchdown, his second career receiving touchdown. Don't expect that to happen again. But, you know, they're using him. They're using Sproles a lot. Sproles led the team in snaps, had a bunch of catches. And then Wendell Smallwood got a little bit of usage as well. You know, don't really want to start any Eagles running backs in fantasy as road dogs at Arrowhead.
You mentioned the Saints and the Patriots being one of the highest totals. That's next matchup.
Yep.
Start them if you got them. What do you got?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we saw that the Patriots have major problems on defense last week, and really last year they did. I mean, they couldn't rush the passer last year. They had the good fortune of facing a ton of bad quarterbacks in the second half of the season, and, you know, that helped them en route to the Super Bowl. And then, you know, having, like, the best quarterback in history obviously helped as well. But their defense is not one to fear. And Drew Brees disappointed in week one for sure. You know, the Vikings have a great defense, and that'll happen sometimes. But he goes back home to the Superdome. This should be a big, high-scoring game. Michael Thomas, awesome, awesome play. Kobe Fleener, you know, again, only played about 50% of the snaps, but he's a big part of their passing game in the absence of Willie Snead. We saw that last year when Willie Snead missed week 3 against the Falcons. Kobe Fleener stepped up for his best game with the Saints. And then last week, Kobe Fleener had a great game against the Vikings. Ted Ginn, he wound up leading the team or all the wide receivers in yards. And he also is worth some consideration, although I don't think that the matchups are great on the outside against Steph Gilmore and Malcolm Butler. But, I mean, Ted Ginn, in what is fully expected to be a shootout, you know, he's definitely someone that is playable depending on your league size and your alternatives that you have on your roster. The RB situation is kind of a mess right now. I think that there will be better days ahead, I think, for Adrian Peterson. But he looked like a complete misfit in week one against the Vikings. Did not help that the Saints fell behind. And that is another concern for running backs on the Saints when you know, especially when they're not really involved in the passing game, that their defense is bad. So what we will see on Adrian Peterson, he belongs on the bench right now. And then Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara were the top 2 backs against the Pats. or I'm sorry, against the Vikings, and I would expect that to remain the case in week two. Alvin Kamara is like a fringe flex play to me right now. Mark Ingram is more of a solid RB2. You know, he got stuffed repeatedly at the goal line, and that's going to hurt his fantasy line. His fantasy line in PPR wound up being okay. I think he had like 12 points. But, you know, that touchdown takes him from a 12-point player to an 18-point player. And, you know, he got stuffed, so that'll happen. On the Patriots side, so I'm starting already like lose my voice a little bit, so I want to hear your opinion on this. So Julian Edelman, I may have underestimated his loss. I thought that they could replace him internally, and they were not able to do that. So what made Julian Edelman so special was his ability to win like early in the down and to get open. And for all Tom Brady has to do is like drop back and swing his arm around and make a throw to Julian Edelman. He's open and he rips off, you know, 6, 8, 11 yard gains like at will. And so they do not, and that's like an extension of the running game. And so they do not have that chain moving, sustaining element right now. Could we see them going to the Superdome, try to run the ball against the Saints and have that be their sustaining element? Because they were able to clear some pretty good lanes, I thought, for their RBs against the Chiefs in week one. I'd like to know what you think.
It's certainly possible. They kind of like to zig, Evan, when the opponent thinks they're going to zag. I mean, Bradford and Diggs and Thielen tore up the secondary so much that a lot of times they, you know, if they know you've got a problem area, they're gonna go after it unless you prove that you fixed it. I mean, that's I don't know. We'll see. I mean, you never know, but I don't know. I mean, I think that they saw enough from, you know, everything that happened in that game Monday night that I think they'll throw it. We'll see. What do you think about what you said about the Saints? So we hit them both, I guess.
Hogan, though, I would keep the faith in Chris Hogan. Just the Chiefs used a lot more. They threw a lot more coverage at him than I expected. Marcus Peters was on him for a lot of snaps, and I mean there were snaps where it looked like he was kind of bracketed by the Chiefs. He had 4 targets of 15 plus yards in week one. I'm sticking with him for sure. And we will see on Amendola. He played a big role, but he got concussed and dude is always hurt. And then Gronk, I agree with people who said that he did not look the same. Look, this is Bill Belichick with 10 days to prepare to face a Saints team that's on a short week. So I have a lot of optimism about the Patriots heading into this game.
All right, let's get to another really interesting game, and that is what we've got going on in Pittsburgh as the Steelers host the Vikings. I'm looking forward to that one.
As am I. Love both defenses. I'm just very interested to see how the game goes. I'm not worried about Le'Veon Bell. He will start to hit his stride. The Vikings, they did defend the run pretty well in week one, but historically they have not been a great run defense team. Under Mike Zimmer, they finished 16th or worse in run defense DVOA all 3 years under Mike Zimmer. So, you know, not overthinking it with Le'Veon Bell. He'll probably be too low owned in DFS this week as a guy who can still get easily, you know, 25, 30 touches and, you know, score a couple of touchdowns, whatever. The matchups on the outside will be great. I just don't think anybody can cover Antonio Brown. So not overthinking it there with Xavier Rhodes. You know, expected more from Martavis in week one, but he's getting it. You know, he's getting back into the swing of things. So, and I don't know how they're going to match up. I'll be very interested to see how the Vikings match up with these guys. You know, from a size standpoint and like arm length, Xavier Rhodes would probably be the guy to put on Martavis. But we've seen Xavier Rhodes chase smaller guys too. I don't know. It's just, you know, this Steelers offense puts you in a quandary, you know, and you have to make decisions and adjust. So it's very, very interesting, the chess match aspect of it. Jesse James scored 2 touchdowns in week 1. He's in the mix as a streamer, for sure. But I think that he's going to end up losing snaps to, like, Vance McDonald. So, not really a guy that I fully trust, but, I mean, I get it. He had a lot of red zone targets last season, too. You know, he's just a big presence, 6'7". He's almost 6'8". He's a huge dude. So, he's going to score some touchdowns. He's more of like a best ball, you know, sort of play, because projecting him week to week is going to be difficult, I think. Vikings were awesome in week 1. We expected them to have a good game, like that offense for sure over the course of the year. Their O-line, it's in good shape right now. You know, there's like a big gap separating the teams that have competent offensive line play. You don't even need great offensive line play. You just need the guys to stand in the way and block the other team. And the Vikings showed that they could do that against the Saints, at least. Now, this is going to be a great test for the Vikings, because, you know, this Steelers defense is awesome. They were awesome down the stretch last year, and they have a lot of good pass rushers, and they stuffed the run, and they got Cam Hayward back healthy, and they avoided a big injury to Steph Tuitt, and they got Joe Hayden. I think expectations should definitely be lowered for the Vikings here, but I mean, I'm a definite believer in this offense. And I think that Stephon Diggs is one of the closest receivers that we have in the league to Antonio Brown. And he's a stud, and you keep rolling with him. I think that this switch that they made of Stephon Diggs moving to the outside and Adam Thielen moving to the slot is actually going to benefit both players in fantasy. That was sort of the debate, like, oh, well, who's going to benefit, you know, from this? Well, guess what? The Vikings did it because they think that it gives them their best chance to win, and it benefits both guys, and I would tend to agree. Adam Thielen's going to catch a lot of passes this season, and Stephon Diggs is going to make a lot of big plays, and Kyle Rudolph is going to score touchdowns. And Sam Bradford is, like, right now, I think he's a top 15 fantasy quarterback. And I would not be afraid to use. I mean, I'd have some concern, because I think the Steelers defense is really good, but I think that he is a reasonable fantasy start this week in a game that has a relatively high total on a slate that doesn't have very many high totals. I mean, 46.5 points is high on this slate.
Agree. How about the last 1 o'clock game, Chicago and Tampa Bay? It's Mike Glennon revenge game. Keep that in mind, Evan. Mike Glennon revenge game here. And the game will be played in Tampa. There was some discussion there.
So the Buccaneers, they spent the last 2 years with Mike Glennon. Dirk Cutter was their OC in 2015, became the head coach in 2016. He should know all of Mike Glennon's strengths and weaknesses. The Bucs have a full game tape on Mike Glennon in this new offense, where, I mean, Mike Glennon, you know, he handled himself all right. But he deserved a better fate, because he drove the Bears down the field, on the last drive. And I mean, they should have won that game. The Bears should have won that game. But I think that it's going to be a lot rougher here in Tampa Bay. Love the Buccaneers defense. They were awesome in the second half of last year. They had, you know, they added Chris Baker, the former Redskins stud defensive tackle, to pair with Gerald McCoy in the middle, and Levante David and Quan Alexander on the second level. And then they added T.J. Ward to go with Keith Tandy at safety, and I like both their corners. Brent Grimes had a great year last year. Vernon Hargreaves, I think, is going to be a breakout player this season. So I love the Buccaneers defense here, you know, for narrative and for, you know, tangible reasons. So they're one of my favorite defensive plays on the slate. Very concerning for Jordan Howard, his week one. I mean, he essentially split time with Tarik Cohen. And Tarik Cohen and Jordan Howard dropped what would have been the game-winning touchdown at the end. And then Tarik Cohen, he's going to have to play a big role because the Bears have nothing at receiver. So Tarik Cohen led the team in targets. He had 12 in week one. And I would expect to see him continue to be heavily, heavily utilized. We talked about on the week one feast, trying to trade Jordan Howard. You know, if you still can, because he, if you still can do it, because he ended up with a decent fantasy game just because he scored that touchdown, but he's a committee back now. And we do not want running backs on our fantasy teams that aren't going to be involved in the passing game. And Jordan Howard doesn't deserve to be involved in the passing game. And I don't expect him to be very much going forward. Kendall Wright, the only Bears receiver worth a look. until we sort some things out, although I think that the practice squad call-up, Tanner Gentry, is a guy maybe to grab in dynasty leagues and put at the end of your bench. But Kendall Wright is somebody that we can definitely talk about. The Bucs slot corner is Robert McClain. He's been with five teams over the last 4 years. Kendall Wright's going to primarily play in the slot. Kevin White, you know, that might be a net positive that they lost him. You know, I feel for him. And, hey, I liked him coming out of college, but he, you know, it's not going to happen for him. I'm sorry. You know, this is year three and he's played five NFL games. And then Zach Miller, I think, is definitely worth discussion. He finished second on the Bears in targets in week one. The Bucks, and I think that, you know, he's going to be on the field a lot. They need him. He's running a ton of routes. He played only about 70% of the Bears snaps in week one. I'm sorry, he played about 60% in week one, but he ran a route on 75% of the snaps that he played. So he's going to be a big factor in their passing game, and I think he is worth a look as a streamer. Jameis, you know, Vic Fangio, the Bears defensive coordinator, he's awesome. But Jameis has had success against him in each of their two meetings. Over 290 yards and two touchdowns in both of those games. Like to see that. Jacquizz Rodgers will be the starter here. Jacquizz Rodgers averaged over 100 total yards per game in his starts last year. Now that, but all but one of them, and Jacquizz Rodgers had five starts last year, all but one of them occurred without Charles Sims, who is now healthy. So I do not expect the same usage that Jacquizz Rodgers got last year in his starts with Charles Sims back, but I think that he's a very viable RB2 / flex play this week against a Bears defense that, I mean, they shut down the Falcons running game in week one, but they also lost Jarrell Freeman, their best inside linebacker. The wideouts in Tampa Bay. Now, the Bears have historically limited Mike Evans, but, you know, he's Mike Evans, and you're starting him in fantasy for sure. I think the sleeper for a big game is Cameron Brate. He had seven catches for 84 yards and a touchdown against the Bears when they played in Week 10 last season. And with no Jarrell Freeman, that is a blow to the Bears' tight end coverage. And then DeSean Jackson. I mean, just you know what you're getting into with DeSean Jackson. It's going to be ups and downs, and it's going to be, you know, frustrating. And that's why I love them in best ball and mostly avoided him in season-long redraft, especially on a team that is going to be balanced. I mean, last year's Bucs finished 16th in the NFL in pass attempts, whereas the Redskins team that DeSean Jackson played for finished 7th in the NFL in pass attempts. So, you know, you're going to have to try to pick your spots with DeSean Jackson. It's not going to be.
Evan, you are the man. That was awesome. You know who else is the man? Anybody that goes to betonline.ag, that's the official sponsor of the Fantasy Feast podcast, the title sponsor. You see their logo on the show's logo. That tells you how we feel about them. If you use the code BIGFEAST over there, they give you a 50% welcome bonus up to $2,500 worth of sportsbook free plays. 2,500 bones. Plus, at betonline.ag, they'll give you a free $25 for your first live bet. And they've got live betting software during the games, which is amazing. They've released their odds first. This place is awesome. Anyway, don't miss out on betting on Thursday night's game or any game risk-free. Go to betonline.ag and use the promo code BIGFEAST to score your $2,500 bonus. iTunes rankings, comments, always appreciated. You guys know the deal with Amazon and PayPal over at rostucker.com. We love those of you that download us multiple times on multiple devices when you're bored or watching TV or whatever. Other than that, totally stuffed, except we've got more to go. We'll have another podcast for you tomorrow, actually after midnight tonight, really, that will have all of the late games, the Sunday Nighter, and the Monday Nighter. I think we're done here.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.